For the next 7 years, the colonels insisted on dealing with Avrakatos as their principal American contact. Ostensibly, he worked for the Department of the Army as a civilian liaison to the Greek military. He moved freely in and out of their offices. He took them out on his boat at night and for picnics and outings on weekends. He was, for all practical purposes, an invisible member of the ruling junta. Avrakatos tells of driving up to the Athens Hilton, where he lunched every day. The doorman saluted the CIA man and took his keys just as one of the colonels came up to meet him for lunch. "How come they let you park your car here?" the colonel demanded. "They won't even let me do that." "Well, I don't know what you do, but I run the country," Avrakatos growled, and his buddy laughed with delight. Accounts of Avrakatos at this high point evoke a Costa Gavras character, a shadowy American in dark glasses, whispering to his fascist colonels. It was a time of coups and counter-coups. Greece and Turkey came to the edge of war over Cyprus. Both countries were members of NATO, and Henry Kissinger and Assistant Secretary of State Joseph Sisko shuttled in and out, trying to keep the alliance from tearing apart. In spite of the significance of the diplomacy, the only American always welcome to the changing military strongmen was Gust Avrakatos. It's hard not to feel a certain unease about such a figure. But those were the days of Cold War, and the kinds of things he did were deemed crucial to the secret struggle. Just how dangerous a game Avrakatos was playing did not become fully evident until 2 days before Christmas 1975, when Richard Welch, the chief of the Athens station, was cut down on his front doorstep by 3 masked gunmen. Welch, one of those gentleman spies who spoke 4 languages and studied the classics, had supposedly been a mere first secretary at the embassy until that November, when an Athenian English-language magazine had identified him as CIA and published his name, photograph, and address. It was a frightening moment for American operatives abroad. A CIA renegade, Philip Agee, had just set out to expose his former colleagues in a sensational book, Inside the Company, and radical newspapers were republishing the names of agents in their areas. A Greek terrorist group, the 17th November, instantly claimed responsibility for the assassination. But Avrakatos and his CIA colleagues blamed Agee for deliberately exposing Welch. 6 months later, Agee fingered Avrakatos as well. From that time on, Gust was vilified in the Greek radical press as the sinister force responsible for most of the country's many ills, preposterous stories that would have been amusing had they not carried with them the threat of death. The articles described him as the head of the dark forces of anomaly, the butcher of Cyprus, the fascist CIA overlord of the colonels, the brutal killer of Cypriot women and children, even the CIA collaborator with the Turks. The Communist Morning Daily was the most colorful. "Under every big rock when lifted, live vermin, evil vipers, and spiders. And under every questionable activity in our land is found the head CIA vermin and viper, Avrakatos." Several of Avrakatos's friends from the junta were murdered, 2 with the same .45 that had killed Welch. Avrakatos became an even more intensely disciplined professional, systematically changing routes, cars, and meeting places, sometimes spending 3 hours of evasion getting to a 5-minute contact. "Typically terrorists will have 3 targets," he says. "They almost always pick the easiest to go after. I became a very hard target. That's how I stayed alive." The terrorists and the ever-pervasive KGB were not the only ones targeting Avrakatos and the CIA at that time. Back home, agents were being dragged before congressional committees to account for decades-old efforts to assassinate foreign leaders or overthrow governments. And for the first time, reporters were attempting to expose current CIA activities. Every operative with an ordinary instinct for self-preservation was keeping a low profile, but for Gust Avrakatos there was unfinished business. His station chief, Dick Welch, had been murdered, and as he saw it, his job was to find and murder the murderers. It was the code of his family. It was the way of Aliquippa. "I wanted to go out and hit 35 or 40 of the 17 November people," he recalls. "We had a list, and I didn't care if we hit some of the wrong ones, so what?" Furthermore, his friends in the Greek Central Intelligence Service, CIS, and the Athens police force would take care of the dirty work. All they needed was the signal. But I was ordered down, Avrakatos remembers philosophically years later. We don't do assassinations, they said. I was just working at the wrong time. And so the tough steel town kid backed off. But it was a different story when it came to Philip Agee. Like most of his colleagues, Avrakatos blamed Agee for having first exposed Welch, and he wanted to make the turncoat suffer. In the U.S. media, however, Agee was receiving a surprising amount of sympathetic treatment. A number of journalists portrayed Agee as an American innocent, radicalized by the Vietnam War and the evil he had discovered. Esquire magazine published Agee's own apologia, in which he explained with righteous indignation why he considered it an act of conscience to try to destroy the organization in which he had served. This was all too much for Avrakatos, who began scheming with friendly intelligence services throughout Europe to label Agee a Cuban agent, thus getting him banned from their countries. It was at this moment, says Avrakatos, that the CIA's deputy director for operations flew to Athens to order him to cease and desist. He said I couldn't use the same tactics that Agee was using against us, and that my efforts were violating Agee's civil rights. He said I would go to jail if I continued. The CIA's operations chief is like the commanding general of a secret army. His word is supposed to be law to case officers in the field. The man was clearly under tremendous pressure, but Avrakatos saw him as siding with a traitor. He flew into a rage. I understand you testified before the Pike Committee and used my name, while you just violated my civil rights, and if you come after me, then I'll come after you, you bastard. I lectured him on what he should be doing, and you know what? That story went out all over the world. Everyone was saying at all the stations, do you know what Gust just did in Athens? He actually called the DDO a cocksucker. Few case officers could have gotten away with that, but Avrakatos was one of those killer operatives that every spy agency comes to depend on. He had been indispensable in Greece, and he was saying things about Agee that virtually every CIA man agreed with. Beyond that, in spite of all his tough talk and his hatred of the Blue Bloods, no one who had worked with Avrakatos doubted that he loved and honored the CIA as if it were his own family. I was never in a fraternity. The CIA is my fraternity, he said in retirement. I still have people who know me and over three-quarters of the stations overseas, and even today if I call any of them and say I want something, it will be done, no questions asked. The fact was that by 1977, Gust Avrakatos was head over heels in love with the agency. When he returned to Aliquippa, his father treated him as a man of honor. You're the one who was educated. You've seen the world. Tell us, what's happening? Oscar asked his son. What are you doing about the communists? I told him that the agency won't let us talk about our work, and he said, good, I'm proud. Whatever you can do for your country, it's not enough. There were moments in Athens, such as when a coup would hit and Henry Kissinger and the rest of the U.S. government would look to Avrakatos, that he would dream of climbing to the agency's very top. Then Gust could visualize perfectly the moment when he, Gust Laskaris Avrakatos, from the long line of Greek defenders of the emperors, would be sworn in as Director of Central Intelligence. But those were Avrakatos's dreams before the intelligence scandals following Watergate rocked the CIA, before Admiral Stansfield Turner took over the agency for Jimmy Carter and sent out his cold form letters on October 31, 1977. That purge of the CIA's operations directorate, still known inside the agency as the Halloween Day Massacre, changed forever the way Avrakatos felt about the CIA. Until then, Avrakatos had never complained about the death threats or the attacks by Congress or the press, because he and every other member of the clandestine services believed that Mother CIA would always take care of her own. It was similar to the confidence that U.S. fighter pilots feel when they are shot down in combat, knowing that everything possible will be done to rescue them, even to the point of risking more lives to save theirs. That is why he was so stunned in 1978 when four of his agents opened envelopes from the new CIA director containing termination notices. The targets of the purge had all been first or second generation Americans like him. They were the Greek speakers, the ones who didn't mind getting their hands dirty, the ones Avrakatos believed were the most valuable. When he checked elsewhere, he discovered that other new Americans were also being let go. 4 Japanese from the Tokyo station, 3 Italians from the Rome station, 3 Chinese. The criteria seemed to be designed to terminate the men who knew the language and the culture, and who had served the longest in one spot, agents just like him. At first, Avrakatos thought perhaps it was a mistake. He convinced 2 of the 4 to appeal. Langley's return cable to one of the men who had requested an explanation stung Gust like nothing he had experienced in his adult life. "We understand you have appealed," it read, "but you are a native Greek operating on native turf in a native language. You really are not an American." Footnote. The author has not seen the document, but this is the language and the message that came through as described to me by those who have read it.